it wears you down. You just need to have good teammates reminding you that you're doing the right thing.
Yes.
Because it sounds weird, but it wears you down to have to do all the good things that you're supposed to do.
Yeah, I had to tell my wife the other day, I said, you know, the last few weeks have been a little stressful, right? And so I said, you know, please forgive me ahead of time, but, you know, it's, you know, I'm like in full on, you know, mode. And so at the end of the, I have to be really emotionally in the right place to help people through this difficult time. And, you know, I know what it's like. I've been through this before, and I have to be at the top of my game on every conversation. I have to be a 10 in every conversation. Like I said, at the end of the day, you know, sometimes I don't have a whole lot left over, but, you know, it's interesting to me. I noticed this in 2008-09. This would be my third, you know, it's yet to be seen. One of the comments that we follow, Brian Westbury, he really updated his numbers. He really feels like, barring some unforeseen event, it's likely 2023 or even 2024 before we actually enter a recession. But no doubt about it, the volatility is real and people's emotions and feelings are real. But I noticed this, I was in the business in 2000, 2001, 2002. It was just grinding on people, you know, because like at least 87 was quick, you know, and then boom. But like 2001, 2000, like I would put a fixed annuity in someone's account, almost everybody's account, just because interest rates are, just so they have something on their statement that went up every single month because everything else went down for like 3 years, you know, it was grueling, right? So, but what I noticed then, I noticed it more in 2008-09, and I noticed even more today is there seems to be less of a tolerance is the word I would use for volatility. It's kind of like, nope, just put, you know, just, it's this, and I think that the volatility is likely to get, you know, going forward because of technology and because there's more people that are doing their own 401ks and larger institutions. I think a big part of the volatility in 2008, 2009 was there's a lot of people that could just hit a button and go to cash. And so I think that it's probable that our next bear market, it may not be the 30% bear market. It may be a 40 or 50% bear market. It may be quicker. It may not be prolonged. Depends. Every time there's a different catalyst, but it's just interesting people's emotions, you know. People are Superman when the market's going up, you know, and then they're, you know, Lois Lane when the market's going down. And it's just interesting to me, human nature, you know, about how fearful and how quickly people become fearful. And I don't know if it's because they're just more inundated with news. I think that's a big part of it. And maybe, like, I had a client call on Friday that her husband died about a year ago. They've been clients for over 10 years. And she said, you know, I'm just calling. I'm sure you're getting a lot of calls, which we really don't, but I'm sure you're getting a lot of calls. And I was calling because, you know, like I'm not really worried, but like, you know, like even my kids are now asking me like, is your accounts okay? And you know, how are things going for you? And you're doing all right. And she's like, I just thought maybe I better call and make sure I'm okay. Is there, you know, and so I gave her a little bit of a pep talk and then we got cut off and she was driving and I said, left a voicemail and sent a follow-up email saying, hey, we can finish our conversation. We also have a scheduled meeting on June 1st. But if you need to talk before then, we're watching things, we're making changes as necessary. But it's interesting.
Yeah, it's a bunch you can talk about, but you can make a really good case right now for either direction.
That's right, you really can.
You know, you don't have the Federal Reserve in your pocket to bail you out right now.
Right.
And we've always had that ever since 87.
Right.
87 was the first bailout by the Federal Reserve, and we've counted on them every time, and they've come through. But clearly, they're on the other side right now. And it's going to take a lot for them to get on our side. And so that's a big deal when it comes to, you know, they call it the Fed put.
Right.
We don't have that. So now you've got the Fed on the other side trying to kind of destroy wealth in order to bring inflation down. And so counterintuitive to all every capitalist, right? You're like, you got an enemy and that's in the Federal Reserve and they are going to try and destroy your wealth in order to bring inflation down. And you're like, wow, I gotta think about that a little bit.
Yeah, though the people that inflation hurts the worst are, rising interest rates don't hurt wealthy people. Inflation doesn't hurt wealthy people. It hurts the middle class.
Yeah, but in the lower.
Like when you go, you may choose to finance your next new car because interest rates are lower than you're getting on your bonds or on your equities, but you don't have to finance your next car. You can pay cash anytime you want to, and you can pay off any of your loans anytime you want to. Same thing with houses or things. Versus people that are in the middle, you know, the average American makes, the average household income in America is $68,000. So you got two people working making $68,000 trying to raise kids. You know, like my wife about, you know, not too long ago, she's like, honey, you will not believe how much I paid for gas. And I said, look, it doesn't matter. And she goes, what do you mean? I said, we can afford it, right? I said, I know you don't like paying $5 for gas, but the good news is if it's $10 a gallon, we can afford it, right? The bad news is there's a lot of people that can't, right?
That's the bad news.
You know, and I say that humbly, not like, I say it humbly, like, look, the good news is whatever it costs, we can pay, right?
Right.
It's not fun. We don't like it if our fuel bill goes from $500 a month to $1,000 a month, but it's not like we're going to have to make a big adjustment in our lifestyle. But there's a lot of people out there, you know, your son and daughter they're in Washington. Seattle, I think Seattle.
In Oregon.
Yeah. Now he can pass your son can pass some of that. He can increase his hourly rate or whatever, pass on that. But I mean, you know, his material costs are going up. His supplies are going up. You know, unless he starts pricing his jobs different, like you advised him, he's going to feel that impact. When you're working for wages, you feel the impact of inflation.
Right. And his wife does the same thing. So those two are always right on the edge.
Yeah. So
they're middle class. I mean, just think about it. They're not low class. They're not lower class.
No, they're middle. They're doing
middle well. Class and they're just, I mean, they have to really.
So what
plan on paying taxes? Okay. They can get behind and not have the money to pay their taxes.
Right. So, you know, what Warren Buffett said in 2000, when oil prices got up over $100, he's like, look, if we don't do something about this, it's going to put the squeeze on the middle class and we're going to have another recession and nobody really listened to it. Same thing happened in 2008, right? The current administration is so disconnected. Now, the only good news about that is that if there's an election today, who knows how it's between now and November, but if the election was today, it would appear that the Democrats are going to take a shellacking in the House and the Senate. And in which case, nothing will get done in Washington for the next 2 years until the next presidential election. And that'll be good for Wall Street, Middle Street, and Main Street, you know, it'd be good for everybody. But the inflation, I mean, you've lived through it. Inflation was a problem when they raised and Volcker raised interest rates from 11% to 20% in short order, right? The interesting thing that I'm trying to be wise about, like we have some inflation hedge accounts where we have about half in T-bills. And then they've actually done pretty well here today. We've got some things in oil, in gold and some other precious metals, small amounts. But, and it's not, you know, like whole portfolio, but we've got some exposure to that and it's actually done pretty well. But you know, like, if you remember in the 70s, you know, Carter all of a sudden put the grain embargo on Russia and commodity prices tanked. The farmers drove their tractors to Washington to protest, right?
Right.
So, and then when commodity prices fell, and I know this because we were in the cattle business, my dad in the 70s lost $20,000 in one day on corn futures. So in one day, that was a lot of money back then. It'd be like $200,000 today, right? He got cured of that. But we're in the cattle business, so he's trying to hedge his feed costs. It just didn't work out. But when feed costs went down, when interest rates went up, then cattle prices went down 50%. And then what soon followed was his land prices went down very fast too. So I'm trying to be, you know, it's interesting. I don't know if you listened to.
What year was that, that all that happened?
It was between 78 and 82 in that range. Okay. 77, 82.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you listen to Forbes' new book. Of course, he always has a platform, you know, but I still like to hear his opinion. Steve Forbes, he's got a great new book that talks a little about inflation. that you might, it's on Audible. I found it a good read. It was just a good refresher.
Yeah.
Basically his, he didn't say anything different than what you and I know, which is he basically said, look, you know, when inflation comes, you can see it coming, right? And you don't want to have all your money in cash. You don't want to have all your money. You definitely want to be careful about having too much in bonds. You definitely want to be short on bonds. And, you know, you want to have some cash available. So when things correct, you have cash to buy low. You want to have some commodities, right? But you got to be careful which kind. And then he talked about, it was a good reminder, you know, it was gold. What's your gold? You know, well, yeah, gold can be good in inflationary times, but gold went from $900 an ounce when inflation started getting tamed. It went from 900 ounce to 300 ounce and stayed there for like a decade. So he's like, you know, if you get exposure to that, you got to watch it, pay attention and get out. Cause when it goes down, it's going to go down really fast. Cause at the end of the day, which is what I believe, at the end of the day, gold doesn't do anything or produce anything. It's strictly a commodity. And so, you know, it's tied to the dollar. When the dollar's weak, gold does well. When the dollar's strong, gold doesn't do well. So, you know, his whole platform of the book really is when you get back to the gold standard. And that, you know, idiots in Washington don't know what they're doing now, right? Which is true too.
Right. And that chances of going to the gold standard are zero. This is exactly what the politicians wanted, which is the only way you can refinance $30 trillion of debt is with inflation. You got to cut the dollar value in half and you got to pay it back with cheap dollars.
Yeah. Well, his point is that if you look over history and you look at any other nation, it's never... Inflation never helps. There's not a single case where you can say, well, they had this high inflation. Like Venezuela, I think, has the highest inflation rate on the planet. It's not helping them.
Oh, no, no, it's terrible. It's a Weimar Republic kind of stuff. But
the other thing that's there too is
politicians don't want to pay back, you know, they don't want to pay off their debt.
Right.
They just want to spend money and they think it's free. And this is what, you know, we couldn't have done anything more to teach the Democrats and the far left the consequences.
Right.
Because all the people they're supposedly trying to help are now getting completely shellacked by this.
That's right.
Throw them back into the conservative camp, which is where they belong.
That's right.
Anyway, we digress, but I think it's important. You know, I think you got to have a point of view and then you've got to, you know, what I recommend is always be moving. Always be taking action. You know, hold what you got is not what people want to hear right now.
Well, that's what I've been doing in my phone calls and my reviews. I've been printing out their portfolio position.
Yep.
And I've been talking to them about in our reviews, okay, in January, we had 20% in cash. We had, 80% in equities. Today, we have 70% in cash and we have 30% in equities. So from January to now, here's the action that we've taken in your accounts. And so you've got a lot more downside protection, but we still have some exposure and some upside potential. As we see things improve, then we'll redeploy that capital. If things continue to deteriorate, we could go 100% if we need to, but in the interim, we'll be able to buy back cheaper than where we are today if the opposite happens. So I've been talking with folks about that. And so that's been really helpful having those, here's what we've done. Here's what we're doing.
Well, and that's wonderful. You know, had you been with me conversation. I mean, Preston, if that's where you are right now and you've done that much and you've done it all along, then you should be out there pounding the pavement and pounding the phones to get your people to tell your story. Because I guarantee you 90% of Wall Street is 80% equities. And 20% bonds and cash, okay? And they haven't moved.
The challenging part is, even in some of those accounts, we're still down 10, 15, you know, 18% net, you know?
Right.
Because we had that big correction in the first year, and normally that's when we get a big boost. So we raised cash, you know, and that, then we redeployed some of that cash, right? Then we had the second round.
No, but it still says, we're paying attention.
Right. Well, yeah, it's we're taking action. We're not just sitting.
We're tax harvesting. You know, we've taken a lot of losses. So you're going to be tax neutral. You're not going to end up with a big tax bill and a count down 30%.
Right. And, we're also looking at Roth conversions, as well. It's another good time to do Roth conversions.
Right.
IRA money that's down, which is good.
And I tell the guys, you know, it's not a big deal, but just doing something, reinvesting dividends, right? And try to get people to take a little less cash out now and reinvest those dividends and things you're going to hold. You're not going to, you know, these are positions we're going to keep. Let's reinvest. I told my little stock group that, and they were like, that's a great idea. Now it can't be, you know, that much money to these guys, right? So they've got 50 grand in reinvested dividends over the year, or 200,000 in reinvested dividends. Who cares? But to them, that was a big deal. That was really smart to them. So they're not hearing that from their financial advisor, see?
Well, and I will say that while we might have had a little increase in concern or even a few phone calls, because we have scheduled calls with all our clients, we're not getting inundated with phone calls because we've been having, and I've been telling since the beginning of the year, I've been telling since December, we're going to have a 10% correction sometime in 2022. I don't know when it's happening, but it's going to be at least 10%. It may be 15. I don't know when, but we're going to have it. Then we had it. So I was like, oh, great. We got that out of the way. I didn't tell them, okay, it's done. I said, hey, we had it. We're likely to have another one or two of these, and it's going to be a volatile year. You know, expect that. So, yeah, so as you know, it's all about, I re-listened to story selling recently.
Oh,
and
good.
Also went back. And so I have some stories in my hip pocket, like educating and reminding people about, you know, who Paul Volcker was, and you might remember that name. And so here's who he was, and here's what he did, you know, and when he took office, or when he was appointed chairman, interest rates were 11%. Inflation was higher than that. And he was, you know, bound to raise interest rates to tame inflation. And he did. He raised them all the way to 20% in short order. And so you probably remember living through that. Yeah. I said, well, here's the good news. We're having high inflation, but interest rates are at 11%, and they're likely not to go to 20%. So even if they get really aggressive, we probably won't even be at 11% interest. And that's great news, right? And inflation doesn't last forever. It's temporary. It is a period, and we're experiencing it. And then also I've been able to tell some of my clients the story I told you about Michelle. Hey, look, this has happened to my wife. She got upset, but I had to encourage her that, like, look, I know you don't like it, but it doesn't matter. We can afford it. And then I tell my clients, and here's the good news. The good news is so can you. If gasoline goes to $10 a gallon, you can afford it.
Right.
And it won't affect your lifestyle. The bad news is there's a lot of people that can't, and it will. And then they say, you're right. That is good news. And yes. And so it's helpful to keep things in perspective. We're having a little challenge on, finding our right candidate. I did have a candidate that was really kind of overqualified that applied when we were on vacation. And by the time I got back from vacation, somebody had already scooped him up. He found out how bad it was. He was an officer. He had great experience. Even if I had talked to him ahead of time, I don't think I would have got him because he just was such a great candidate. But I haven't got any more candidates from my recruiter, surprisingly. I've gotten, you know, all the free military stuff that you sign up for. And I've gotten zero response from them. I hired another candidate, that's a firm similar to that. They don't specialize in military, but they're hiring firm to pay them, you know, a percentage if they kind of, we were a little off track because he sent me a great candidate, but I saw the salary part was 180 to 200,000. I was like, yeah, well, I'm not looking to pay that, you know? And so he's like, oh, I'm sorry I missed that part. So he's like, okay, I'll find you somebody to send you a check. So then we also did and so we're on like Workable or something like that. I've gotten a few male candidates there, but no, just that one military. And then we did a listing on Indeed, and we've gotten some qualified applicants in terms of qualifying for the skill set, but they're not military. They don't have the background things looking for. I mean, they would be qualified for an administrative position. They would probably do a good job. We had a phone conference earlier today with Indeed, and they did give us some insight that it only does a 25-mile radius, which I think was part of the problem. And you can't specifically – we didn't want to make military requirement, but a preference. But she showed us how you can actually search their database and put in keywords like E5 active military and then draw a circle. And so these are people that necessarily aren't applying for jobs, which I think we may have more success in that manner, because I really feel like a lot of military candidates wouldn't know to apply or look for our job, that I'm going to have to sort of educate them on, here's why you want this role, and here's the career path. The career path is director of client service. Then you're going to be chief of staff. Then you're going to be financial planner. Then you're going to be advisor, if that's the path that you want to take. You know, and here's the starting salary, and here's the finishing salary, and here's the upside potential.
It's a good case.
It's been a couple of months. My wife's probably a little more, I mean, I feel like things are going okay. You know, we've got some people to take up the slack. We have our virtual specialized staff member that we increased her hours. And then we brought on another team member. It's a great tool. I don't know if I share with you. It's called Zirtual. For anybody who knows independence, it's a great tool. So it's like virtual, but with a Z. They're all the candidates are all pre-screened. They're all college educated. They have college experience or they're college educated. They're, you know, they specialize, and they found someone for us. He's doing a great job. He's a young guy. He's in his 20s, but he's really sharp. He's really fast. And the rates are like 20, 30 bucks an hour, you know, depending on how many hours you use. And the minimums are real low. It's like 500 bucks a month minimum. You can move up or down the scale. And Shelly's been really pleasing. I had him up to 50 hours because I thought we might use that. And Shelly didn't even use it all up. So she went back to 35 hours. So from my perspective, with the exception of the physical things, we're doing okay and kind of managing things. But, you know, she's a little more concerned, I think, than I am. So I'm just kind of curious about your input. I did schedule an interview with a lady that took some initiative. She went on Indeed. Not only do you put your application, but we actually put a couple of like proficiency tests. It's their test, but you can have your candidates take in. So this young lady actually took both the proficiency tests. A lot of candidates hadn't even taken the test. And then she sent a little message saying like, hey, I wanted to give you a little more information about me that might not be in my resume, Then on top of that, she actually called my office and said, hey, I'm just calling to make sure that you received my resume to see if you had any questions. So that kind of intrigued me, like, well, here's someone that's, you know, the only thing that I think we might have messed up is, you know, the recruiter had said, you know, I think 50 to 52 is the range you have to get to attract an E4, E5, E6, and with 20 plus year experience. So that's what we put on Indeed. But I think for some of the, I've got the feeling some of the people that are applying, I probably don't have to pay them that much, if that makes sense. Like, I think they've been all women that have applied so far on Indeed, six of them. I mean, we're getting applicants and they are looking for a job. Most of them either have a job but I think the salary is saying, ooh, I'm making 30 now, but he's paying 50. I think I'm going to apply for this job kind of thing. So that's my only concern, but I don't know. What are your thoughts? Do you think that I should come back to the why and stick with military, male?
No, I think you're doing fine. You get frustrated because your pool is limited. The key is to hire the right person.
That's right.
All right. I mean, I use military because I saw in your personality that this would be a good fit.
Well, and I'm asking that question because I said this to Shelly when she said, you know, got a little frustrated. I said, look, the definition of insanity is you keep doing the same thing over and over expecting different results. I've had over the years plenty of qualified people that have worked for me and done a good job, right? With the exception of a few, right? It hadn't been all of them, right? But I've learned enough about my personality and how I work, and my wife can attest to it. I mean, you know, there's times where, you know, it's kind of hard for her to quit. She could, but it's harder, right? But, you know, I'm a little challenging, for lack of a better word, right? I can be very direct. I can be very, I don't care. This is a results-oriented business. It doesn't matter that you did this and this and this. What matters is the client's check bounced, or what matters is the client didn't get their deposit, or what matters is this has to get done this week, period. It doesn't matter. All the other stuff doesn't matter. What matters is this. And that I'm not, you know, I'm really good with clients. I'm very sensitive. And the irony of it, Rob, is that I'm really good with women. Female clients, I mean, like if it's a husband-wife couple, nine times out of 10, I immediately gain favor with the wife sooner than the husband. And I do really well with widows. And I think it's because they feel seen and heard, and I listen to them. I don't, you know, dismiss them. And there's a connection there, you know, a good connection. some recent new clients, like on the second meeting, she said, Preston, they didn't become clients yet. She's like, and she said it for her husband, I just totally trust you. That's what she said. And they have an advisor they work with that she doesn't feel that way about. You know, and she said, I just totally
trust you. So here's one of the things that I had to do. When I find myself doing this, when I send an email or a text, I go right to the heart of what I'm going to say. And then I go back and I read it and I go, okay, I got to put Alan. No, I got to actually put more in there.
Right, right. No, I mean, sandwich, like, hi, how you doing? Good to see you. This stuff. And then thank you so much for all you're doing. This is really good. Yeah, you got to do kind of sandwich. You put the meat in the middle, but you got to put the sandwich on this. Yeah, that's what I meant.
And all I'm saying is, you probably need to put the sandwich in your conversations.
Yeah. And I think, so I was just saying to Shelley, look, I'm okay to hire someone that's not military, but if we really want to attract someone that's going to be with us for the next 10 or 20 years, I mean, there's no guarantee of anybody you hire, but it would be worth waiting some extra time to get, it's not like we don't have any other help. We have two other virtual staff that are helping us. And my son, it's actually kind of a good opportunity for my son. He was wanting a little summer job. He's 12. He's going to be 13 in June. His buddy's walking dogs in the neighborhood. And Price has knocked on doors in the neighborhood and sold, like, coasters. I mean, he's quite the salesman. And so I said, I talked to him. I said, Shelly, you need some help with the folders. You know, could you use some help with the fold? Because that's really the part she wants to help with, is process those stuff and print reports. And a lot of it's repetitive. Jaime's preparing the reports. Someone's still got to print them on the printer and put them in the folder and all that stuff. And I said, you know, Price is very detail-oriented. He's an A-plus student. He's really good at details. He's great at math. This might be a good opportunity. Let's figure out what minimum wage is, like $7.35 an hour. How many hours a week do you need? Would 5 hours a week be enough? You know, if we hired like, because I thought about, we'll just hire like a summer intern, like a high school student. And I thought, well, what about Price? And so she said, well, that's a pretty good idea. I said, you know, just make it like on Fridays from noon to five or whatever time you want, you know, 10 to three or whatever, that this is his job. He's got to get. So I talked to him. He goes, oh yeah, that'd be great, Dad. I'd love that. And so he's been doing that. You know, it's $7 an hour. I can't find anybody else $7 an hour.
And well, and then just increase his hours.
Yeah. I'm making the point that from my perspective, there's no desperation about we got to have someone.
Right. Right. I'm so, with you. I
and so, plus it's an opportunity for him to get some exposure into our business and some insight. Even though this may or may not be the field that he chooses, he wants to be
right. Architect. But you got a smart kid.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
You're good. I'm a big believer in interns. I started them at 16 and kept them for 4 years. You know, in the beginning, this gal wouldn't even look me in the eye. And then by the time she was done, she's, you know, creative person. You know, changing the world, and then goes off to college and gets, and she, you know, she was brilliant. She never got anything but an A and still is.
I'm going to say from that perspective, I don't mind being patient, but at the same time, we've gotten like no activity as far as, but I was just sharing with her, like, look, it'd be better to be patient and wait and get the right person.
I agree with you.
Than to hurry up. And I said, you know it about me and I know it. Look, I know how to be polite to people, but you know, it's like when you get married, it's different when you're in, you know, that murderously close proximity with someone. And so when someone's in my office, it just has to do with my personality. When I get to the office, I'm all about business. I'm not there to chit chat. I don't want to sit around and visit. I'm going to get there. I'm going to do whatever it is. And then I want to leave mentally, physically, everything. I want to be out of the office. I don't want to my goal is not to spend more time, it's spend less time, and having a person in the office is the whole purpose of that, is so that I don't have to be here, right? So that's the challenge to me, is, you know, that I'm in a hurry, right? Or I don't have the time, space. And so I'm sure that comes across as either.
You're doing great. You're doing great. I'd say you're right on. I'm impressed so far today. Everything you've been telling me is very good.
Okay. And, you know, as I told Shelley, you know, I'm an optimist, not a pessimist. But I'm also a realist, you know, and I said, we are going to have another recession at some point. And that could be 6 months from now. It could be 3 months from now. It could be, you know, 3 years from now. But at the same time, even though we have some fixed financial planning fees, which I actually really appreciate that we have those, and we have some fixed coaching fees, you know, we're still, you know, our accounts are still down. So our next quarterly, unless we have a nice rally between now and July 1st, our revenue is still going to be down. So, you know, being all excited about paying someone a big salary is, you know, we certainly want to hire someone and have to let them go if things got, you know, 2008, 2009 kind of rough, you know. So we could use someone, but okay, well, that's kind of good to verbalize that and get some feedback with that. So kind of in line with what you said. So, if you were me, right? So I've been through several down markets. We have clients happy, concerned, you know, whatever. But what, if you were me, what would you be doing now? And how would you be marketing, or where would you be looking to attract new clients whose advisor isn't talking to them, is not being proactive, or is doing nothing or not listening to them?
Well, I mean, one of the greatest things you can do is, if, you know, the line, if you were with me, okay, and that's a really big deal. You can't lie, but if you are in a position, people will move their accounts, because they're still 80% stocks and their FAs tell them just hold what they got. Okay. And you're not. Okay. And I'm not saying you're right or they're right. All I'm saying is you took action and you've been taking action. You haven't been frozen at the stick, not doing anything. So one of the things that you need to do is to tell your story to your centers of influence. This is why you need to have these monthly calls with your centers of influence. I mean, people, you cannot market yourself out of sight, out of business. You have to be out there. So this is the time to get back out there and have your breakfast, lunch, and dinners, or breakfast and lunches with your centers of influence, and tell your story.
Okay.
Okay, because there's a big difference between being down 50% and being down 10%.
Amen to that. Okay. I mean, I learned that after the 2008, 2009. One, you know, it doesn't matter how many assets you get under management, you have $1 billion. Look, why, if you're getting paid, if your compensation is tied to that, why do you want to sit and watch those things go down 50%? Because you say, well, I'm still getting fees on 500 million. Yeah, but you still took a pay cut when you could be getting fees on 800 million or
right.
750. Well, why have that extreme? Plus, the part I was trying to say is, I don't know if you've noticed this in your career, but what I'm noticing is, and I mean, I noticed it as people age, but I just mean in general, people just seem to be able to handle volatility less today than they did in years past. I don't know why that is.
I think part of it is, you know, they went through 07, the 08, 09 period was really traumatic for them. They've gotten back in the market. They've run it up for 10 years and they've done really well, and they don't want to give it all back.
Yeah.
Okay. And you look at a chart and the chart still goes like this with this little blip here.
Right.
You know, it's nothing compared to this whole thing. If we come down here,
right,
it's 50% of that the still, last 10 years. It's a disaster. Okay.
Right.
And that's what I think intuitively people are like, oh crap, I've gotten used to this lifestyle with this number, right? They got right. A number in their head. That was a high watermark.
That's always the challenge, is people have a number. Yeah. They
got a number and they got that in their head. And, you know, they may say, you know, I'm probably never going to get back to that number, but I sure as heck don't want to be down to this number.
Yeah.
So if my guy isn't doing something about it, I want somebody that's when they see the emergency light go on, they took action. And therefore, I think probably the best time I've ever seen for prospecting.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt about it. And also, I'm in a great position versus most other advisors for three reasons. One, because of the fact that I don't have 300 households or 500 households. Two, because our practice is supernova, everybody's on scheduled meetings, scheduled calls. So it's not like I'm having to worry about either making 50 calls or receiving 50 calls today, right? We have great lines of communications. As far as the relationship's concerned, our clients are very happy with the relationship, so there's no angst there. So I actually have the time freedom where most advisors are so busy fielding phone calls or hiding in their bunker. That's the thing I've never understood about advisors. I don't know, you know, I mean, some advisors just go hide, and that's like the very worst thing to do. But the other ones that don't hide, they're just so busy, they can only focus on, you know, their top 10% or top 20%, and they end up losing a lot of business, and they have no time to market themselves or to attract new business.
I think you just answered your story. I mean, that's just think of what you just said. You're small, you're doing supernova, great communication, great relationship, and you have time to prospect. They, on the other hand, are large, right? Mm-hmm. They hide versus communicating, and they have no time. I mean, that's your story. That's your story you say to your CPA. That's your story right there. They're large, they hide, and they have no time. Okay, so if you gave them a client right now, they couldn't handle it. I'm small, I communicate, I have a plan, and I have time.
I like it.
I act. I would say that's four.
Okay.
There's four things there. You're small, you're doing supernova, you act, and you have time. They're large, they hide, they don't act, and they have no time. And so this is a Dunkirk moment. That, right?
Yeah, it's a great movie. I've seen it several times.
So this is a Dunkirk moment. What do you mean? This is a time to help your clients get off the beach. Okay? Because their FAs are going to die in the beach.
Yeah. Yeah, if things go south and they're 80% equities, their clients are going to get their hats handed to them.
Well, it's just... Are they going to do anything? They haven't done anything at this point. What's to say of it? You know, they go down another 20%.
Right.
And they're going to actually do something. And then are they going to do something and it's going to be too late.
Right.
You know, and then they're not going to get back in. And then they're going to zig when they should have zagged, where you've got time, money, and a plan. See, so I mean, it's a big difference. And there's very few people could have said, had you been with me, this is what you would have heard, and this is what would have happened. What a difference.
Good place to be.
It's a very good place to be. And here's the other thing. Firms like Merrill Lynch have been blowing the whistle, and so has Morgan Stanley. And these guys have done nothing. So you tell me, do you know Merrill Lynch went bearish at such and such a date? And when was your FA, did he blow the whistle and say, get off the beach? He still hasn't, right? He says, just hold everything. We're good. We'll ride it out. Morgan Stanley's been saying it for 2 years. Shit, Mike Wilson, he's been bearish for 3 years. Now,
eventually the bears are always right.
Right, and the bears
sometimes
are always...
Sometimes they're bears for 10 years before they're right.
Right, the bears always sound smarter, too.
After the fact, yeah.
Yeah, well, they always sound smarter even when they're in the bull market, because they're absolutely... No, they do. They just sound smart. God, that guy's so smart.
Yeah.
So he's been wrong for 10 years, yeah.
Right, he sounds smart. Hey, speaking of CPAs, do you want to switch gears for a few minutes and say a little bit more about Brad? So Brad Blessing is one of the nicest. He has two great qualities. not only is he really nice and good with people and loves people, he has Jesus in his heart, he's a Christ follower, but he's also one of, if not the smartest and best CPA I've ever met or worked with. Now, my exposure may be limited, so maybe there's other ones that are better than him or have more sophistication, but of all the ones I've ever dealt with, he knows way more than any other CPA I've ever known. He knows about stuff that other CPAs haven't heard about before. Early on in his career, he's in his 50s. Early on in his career, he was independent. Then he went to work for a big firm. I was actually introduced to him about 13 years ago, maybe 14 years ago, 13, 14 years ago, 2009, maybe, around 2008, 2009, 2010, by an estate planning attorney that we work with. And I said, hey, I'm not having my CPA. Do you have something to work? He goes, yeah, I know a guy I think is really good. At the time, Brad was at the big, huge CPA firm in downtown Austin. And we went down at his office and went up, you know, I mean, they're a huge firm, did a lot of big corporate tax returns and he was very knowledgeable. And he was there for several years. And then when the Austin traffic got ridiculous, he said to them, hey, look, it's taking me an hour and a half to get back. It's taking me an hour and a half to get to work and back each way. I'd like to work from home, like 3 days a week, this way before COVID, and come in the office too. And they're like, nope, not doing it. So he said, are you sure? And they said, yep, we're not doing it. He says, okay, fine, I'm leaving. So he left and most of his clients went with him. So he's independent like us. He's very genuine, very sincere. He's really, really good CPA. He's a terrible administrator. He needs like a chief of staff. So he kind of has a similar business model in terms of like us. He's independent. He took my advice on, I finally told him, listen, if you're going to be on your own, like you at least got to get a Regis office where you have someone answer the phone, like a live person answer the phone. Things used to be just got like a cell phone or just got a recording. And I said, you at least have to have like a physical office and you at least got to have someone, even if it's Regis. And so he did that. And he said, thank you for that advice. We're going to get it. And so he has some other people that basically do all the preparation, and then he does the final overlook and files return. He's really, really good. He's got another sort of semi-admin. But here's always been and when he works at the big firm, what I liked was if he was on vacation or something, I could get an answer to my question. Someone could help me, whatever. So and I told him this in person the other day, and I said, look, I love you. And in my opinion, you're one of not the best CPAs I've ever known or worked with in my entire career. Never met another CPA as much knowledge, understanding, and works well with clients and loves people and interacts. But I said, as far as being an administrator, you suck. I said, if you were an administrative person, I would have fired. And I said, actually, if we didn't have such a good relationship and you weren't so knowledgeable, I would have fired you a long time ago because, I'll call you and you don't return my call. I'll send an email and then I'll hear back from them. Then I got to send another email. Then I'll call. It takes like three, like two emails and a phone call or a phone call and two or three emails. And then he finally will return your call or your email. And I told him a couple of years ago, whatever you need to do to get rid of your C clients, give them away, sell them, fire them, whatever you're going to do. But you need to just focus on your business clients or the people you're going to work with and then give them great service even before we started. So anyway, so when we came back in, he's had kind of a rough year. Maybe it's been 6 months now. His wife died unexpectedly. He's never really told me what happened. I don't know if she had a heart attack or if she was in a car crash, but it was unexpected.
God.
His wife of, I don't know, first and only wife. They have several children. They've got three or four kids and they've got four or five grandkids. I mean, he's a great dad and husband and father and grandfather. And then a few months ago, it was terrible timing. He was driving home. After church, he went by the grocery store and he's driving home and he started feeling a little lightheaded and he went to pull over and hit a tree. He basically, I guess he didn't have a heart attack, but now he has a pacemaker. So as a result of hitting the tree, the airbag didn't go off. And so his sternum took all the stuff. He was in ICU for a couple of weeks. He nearly died. He was in ICU for a couple of weeks. He's recovered, but it couldn't happen at worse times. It's kind of like right in the middle of tax season, right? So, we gave him a lot of leeway to Fox Kitchen, but I actually have introduced him to a couple of clients because he will come to my office and, from his house to his office or from his house to my office, about the same distance. And actually, if I had more office space or another office space, if he would supernova, I mean, he's the kind of person that if he, that he's good enough you could actually partner up with because he does such a great job. And he wants to stay in the business, you know, for, I mean, there's no need for him to retire anytime soon. But he's watched me because he does my returns. He's watched me, you know, and how my business has grown and the different sources of revenues. And he listens. And so at the last meeting, he said, well, I need somebody to hold me accountable. You know, because I told him, look, just hire virtual, you know, hire someone to check all your emails, to spam everything else, and to daily give people, you know, it doesn't have to be a 1 hour response. It would be better if it was, but you know, at minimum, get back to them within 24 hours. That's all anybody expects. Same day's better, but you know, minimum 24 hours. Let them monitor your email. Even if, you know, like he does stupid shit. Like he goes, he doesn't even put his out of office email on. The last time I emailed him about this thing, he was like, oh, I'm sorry. I was out for a few days with my grand, spent time with my granddaughter. Well, great. Put it out of office email so I'll know that you're out. You know, like, hey, I'm out of town for the next 3 days. Limited access to email. So I said, well, let me think about it. I said, maybe I should introduce you to my coach. That's probably better. And then the more I thought about it, you know, you have a lot more wisdom and experience to help him supernova his CPA firm than I do. And, it's probably more cost effective for you to help him. But I think you can also help coaching to be a better business partner for me. I'd love for him to be, I'm trying to create this mastermind group, but until he gets his act straight, you know, I've got to the clients. I mean, they're like, hey, you know, have you heard from him? Like, we don't know if he filed an extension for us or, and he bought a lot of grace with them because of his rec and they're, you know, they're my clients. So, you know, they're pretty understanding, but anyway, so I think he's at the point where he's ready to change, but he needs some help and guidance and coaching and direction. So that's why I wanted to introduce you to him. And I think, like I said, I think he has some really good clients and I think that they'd be even happier, you know, if he would give them supernova service. But it's, you know, kind of goes against the grain.
It's the whole professional industry. CPAs, attorneys, you know, estate planning attorneys, none of them doctors, none of them believe in service. They are all about, even concierge doctors don't call out and they don't hire somebody to call out.
I know. I think it's less of, I think what it's just part of too many clients and not enough hours.
I know. The average doctor has like 2,500 clients, patients, you know, so it's insane. They just try and do something that it's just greed, American greed in the worst way. I mean,
I told him, I said, basically you're doing everybody a disservice. Like you're losing some clients and the people that because he even said, like, there's people that I'm really not helping, that they need to go away, you know, like doing a standard deduction return. I said, no, they're wasting your time. It's actually costing you money to do the returns.
Right.
There's people that are willing to pay you the serious money.
Well, I think I know Cindy is following up and setting up the appointment.
Yeah, it's already on the calendar. It's 4 o'clock on, I think, what?
Wednesday. Okay.
Central time.
Are you going to be on there or is it just?
No, I'm going to be on there. So I'll give you the introduction.
Yeah, you give me the introduction and then you just step off.
That'll be fine.
Okay, good. Thank you, by the way.
Yeah,
I think.
Well, let me just say this. I mean, I'll tell you the same thing I tell my friends. Like, first of all, he's a really nice human being, right? That's most important. He has Jesus in his heart, right? Those kind of really go hand in hand. I mean, there are some nice people that don't have Jesus in the heart, but when you get down to it, sometimes they're not as nice as you think they are. But he loves people. He wants to do well, and he needs your help and he needs someone like you's help and guidance on how to implement the change and how to do the things and to hold him accountable. And I think he's at the point where he's ready and willing to learn, and he's seen the financial benefit as well as I think that the other thing is with the little that having the pacemaker, I think it's kind of woke him up. Like I gotta make some, I can't.
Pacemaker is a big deal, by the way.
Right. I know. He's like, you know, I can't work 14. I think he's realizing I can't work these kind of hours. Right.
No, I mean, a pacemaker is, I had AFib. Okay. Right. And there's a lot of steps between AFib and a pacemaker. A pacemaker is basically your system won't work anymore. You're going to die if you don't put in a pacemaker.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's where he is.
Yeah. I mean, basically, like, everything worked. It was his electrical system, as the doctor said.
Yeah. Well, if the electric system goes, you're dead.
That's right. If the alternator goes out, you better find a gas station really fast.
I mean, I've been through it. My wife's been through it. I mean, I've got a little chip in there to monitor my, you know, I went through ablation, and I've got buddies that have had 8 late ablation operations before they ever go to a pacemaker. So, I mean, he goes from nothing to pacemaker means his system was shot.
Yes.
So big deal. This isn't little, you know, those pacemakers are brilliant, but you still got something artificial in you keeping you alive.
Right. The good news is both of his parents are still alive. So he's got
that going for him, but they don't have pacemakers.
That's why they have OB cancer, but yeah, they don't have pacemakers.
Right. Okay.
Anyway, I think it's a good introduction. Hopefully it'll help you.
Thank you.
I'm sure it'll be a good conversation either way.
It'll be an interesting thing because I've coached lawyers. I've just never coached a CPA because they never have time to even talk to you. So I don't know if he's got to do it the right way.
Yeah.
Then we'll see, you know, I'll give him an opportunity.
I mean, if you can coach lawyers, you can coach anybody.
You're right. You know, they all could use every professional could use a lot of me.
That's right. But well, let's keep you on time. We'll keep us both on time. I've got another Zoom at 3 and so do you.
Yeah.
So thanks for your feedback.
Preston, and thank you. Good, different kind of conversation today. Kind of fun.
Yeah. Have a great rest of your day.
Thanks. Bye-bye.